The next case today is the United States versus Feliciano. Parties ready? Okay, we'll hear first from the appellant.
Chief Judge Erdman, members of the court, my name is Captain Michael Gold, and I, along with Captain Scott Martin, represent Private Feliciano, the appellant. I respectfully request to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
May it please the court. The military judge made two errors in his instructions to the panel. First, he incorrectly instructed the panel that appellant's mistake of fact had to be both honest and reasonable rather than just honest. Second, he failed to instruct the panel on the defense of voluntary abandonment. With respect to the mistake of fact instruction, the military judge erred for three reasons. First, both Langley, decided in 1991, and Jones, decided in 1998, remain good law such that an accused must have had the specific intent to commit each element of the underlying offense, thereby requiring only an honest mistake of fact as a defense. Second, while Foster, decided in 1982, is inconsistent with this rule, even under Foster's rationale that an accused need only intend the prescribed act, Foster held that an accused must still be aware that the intended objective is an illegal act. Here, the underlying illegal act is having sex without consent, not merely having sex. Third, to the extent this court views Article 80 as ambiguous regarding whether the application of the specific intent applies to the underlying culpability otherwise required of the crime, the rule of lenity requires upholding Langley and Jones rather than adopting the government's novel approach. Lastly, the government cannot prove that this error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's because it turned appellant's otherwise exculpatory statement of recognizing this mistake into an inculpatory statement, and at the same time, it lowered the government's burden. In United States versus Langley, this court held in a prosecution for assault with attempt to commit rape, at some point during the assault, the accused must have had the specific intent to commit each element of rape.
Okay. You say the judge erred because didn't instruct on voluntary abandonment.
Yes, Your Honor.
As I understand voluntary abandonment, it is a prick of conscience or something like that. Oh, what I'm about to do is wrong, and I'm going to give it up. Here, you don't appear to have anything like that. You have the other troops saying, you're about to rape her, get off her, you're going to get 25 to life.
And, Your Honor,
and the accused says, oops, I guess you're right. How is that in any sense a prick of conscience rather than a cascade of terror?
And, Your Honor, at this point, if you look at what he said, he offered two separate reasons. Mr. R.S. stated that what appellant was doing was wrong and that it would potentially be punishable. And appellant agreed with it.
Well, he said it was rape. I suppose that's wrong, but that sounds like a legal rather than a moral statement. But anyway, go ahead.
And, Your Honor, if you look specifically at JA 30 to 31, Mr. R.S.'s testimony states, Mr. R.S. told appellant that ain't right, that what appellant was doing was rape, and if he continued, he would be punished for rape.
But mm-hmm. As soon as he said that ain't right, appellant didn't say, oh, you're right. Schwartz had to continue. The person who was present during the assault continued with, essentially, to use the old West term,
and we
you're
going
to swing. So it was only after that that he desisted. So how is that? We know it's abandonment, but how is that voluntary abandonment under the law?
And, Your Honor, that's exactly for the panel to decide. Here, if we look at the
You need to have some evidence before there's any duty for the military judge to give an instruction, and then you're right, it's for the members to decide. But there has to be some evidence.
Yes.
Reasonably raising the defense.
Yes, Your Honor, and the statement that he agreed with it, while ambiguous, that ambiguity, because we have no temporal proximity as to exactly how short the statement was, we don't know whether or not the statement was, hey, man, that's wrong, that's rape, you should stop it.
So in terms of facts, right, her pants had been pulled down and she appeared unconscious. Was there any evidence saying that those two things weren't true?
In
your client, right, is basically perched over an unconscious person with her pants pulled down.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Is there any evidence that that's not what happened?
No, Your Honor, there is no evidence whatsoever, but we do have contradictory.
Is there any legal theory whatsoever in which that's not rape, or that's not an attempt to rape, or that's appropriate, proper legal behavior?
There is conflicting evidence, Your Honor, with respect to whether or not she was awake versus unconscious. If you look at Mr. R.S.'s own testimony, it's contradictory. He states, yes, she was stating no, 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 isn't quite sure whether or not she was stating no, 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 which would indicate that a person has to actually be awake in order to say it. He states that he only saw her profile when he first got up there and readily admits to the panel in his testimony that at the end of the day, a person who was drunk could be going in and out of states of consciousness.
I'm sorry, go right ahead.
What constitutes some evidence? Is it a scintilla of evidence, a hint, a trace? What does some evidence mean?
I think this case is exactly like United States versus Davis, Your Honor, in terms of looking at, and this is Sergeant Davis, Your Honor, if you look at the court's decision in that particular case, you stated that some evidence of the defense of property defense was raised by appellant's own statements that he thought, bear with me one moment, court's indulgence.
I'm asking it, though, in a broader sense, not tying it into specific facts. If you were to have this court define what some means in the context of some evidence, how would we define that?
Your Honor, this court has looked at it in terms of a 917-type basis before. This court has specifically stated that it's a legal sufficiency-type requirement. So in terms of that, it's a very, very low bar to be met.
And how does that change at all in a case like this where the instruction isn't requested?
In terms of that, Your Honor, this court has made clear in United States versus Taylor that the military judge has an independent duty, irrespective of the counsel raising
it. Can I understand that we're deciding that issue, right, as to whether or not we apply waiver or forfeiture, but let's assume, right, that we're going to apply a regular plain error analysis.
Yes, Your Honor.
So then how does that change the what some evidence must be?
It has to be clear and plain then, Your Honor. I think in this particular case, given the fact that the regulation itself in terms of how the president has, excuse me, not the regulation, but the way the president has defined it, it hinges solely because of that person's own sense, and then further goes on to state that it's not allowed if abandonment results. Right? If we look at the...
Before you go on, I know you kind of answered this question earlier, but I'm still stuck on what is ambiguous about the accused's statement that that's right. What's supposed to be ambiguous about that?
Well, Your Honor, in terms...
I'm not saying it in a negative sense. I'm having some problems as a matter of logic understanding why that's ambiguous.
Your Honor, Mr. R.S. posits two different reasons for appellant to get off of Ms. KLF. He posits first that the action itself is wrong, and then secondly, that appellant will be punished for it. The solely because of language contained in voluntary abandonment by the president's language combined with the...
I understand that, but let's assume for the sake of argument and favorable to your argument that it's the first one.
Yes, Your Honor.
Then explain to me again why that knowing and hearing that that's wrong and you stop why that's voluntary again on his part?
Your Honor.
He hears the statement from the other person, hey, man, that's not right, and he desists. Why is that voluntary again?
And in terms of that, Your Honor, we are constantly prompted throughout life by both external and internal justifications for our decisions.
But isn't the very notion of a voluntary abandonment, doesn't that exclude external?
And again, Your Honor, that's something that is for the panel to decide, whether or not it occurred because of or solely as a reason for, in terms of what the actual reason behind it was.
Okay.
So, counsel, I'm interested in the interplay between the de novo standard review and then the plain error analysis, which you were just talking about. Is, in regards to the first two prongs, particularly focusing on the second one for plain error, is the issue whether the military judge identified that there was some evidence? Is that what we're looking at in terms of the clear or obvious nature of the error?
Yes, Your Honor.
So even though our first step then is to say whether we de novo believe that there was some evidence, and then we're applying plain error and saying, should the military judge, under these circumstances, have, it should have been clear or obvious to the military judge that there was some evidence.
And I think the overall standard that we're looking at of some evidence, Your Honor, in terms of a 917 or legal sufficiency type equivalent to it, the standard is so low that if there is some evidence that meets that standard, it is plain error.
Counsel, I'd like to get your views on the language of the President's discussion in the manual, where it said abandonment results in whole, if abandonment results in whole or in part from other reasons, then it's not voluntary. Here, is there any evidence that he would have stopped had there not been this intervention that doesn't even need to be the primary, the sole reason, it only has to be part of the reason?
Admittedly, Your Honor, this is probably the weakest part of the argument, but at the same time, the President's language does state if the abandonment results. It doesn't state if the abandonment is attenuated by, if it is under circumstances for. And that abandonment resulting is a determination that should be made by the panel. And here, the panel very well could have made a decision that, yes, based off of the testimony as it came out, the credibility of Mr. R.S. and what he stated, that, yes, at the end of the day, this was a situation where that first part of the statement, which was said first, is what caused the appellant to stop.
Can you move on to your instructional error now? Okay.
Counsel, do you think that it weakens your argument at all that R.S. had been asleep when whatever had started, and that was when he woke up and saw what was happening, that he said what he said, and then your client stopped?
I think certainly if this court were to find that she was actually unconscious, yes, it would weaken it, Your Honor. But I think that the record itself is not clear in terms of what Mr. R.S. is stating.
R.S. was asleep.
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. R.S. woke up and we got testimony.
He woke up hearing kissing noises and no, right? He looks over and then he says what he says. And then the appellant stops.
Yes, Your Honor. And in terms of the no, Mr. R.S. admitted that he didn't put that into his sworn statement to CID, that his sworn statement was the truth, the whole truth, and he couldn't explain why he wouldn't have told investigators that at the time.
Wait a minute. What didn't go into the CID statement? The no?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead and answer the question.
Don't you think that it significantly weakens your argument that R.S. was asleep, came to wake up, saw this going on, confronted the appellant, and then he stopped? confronted and said, and oh, by the way, you're going to get put away for a really long time.
I think certainly in terms of the facts here, that's certainly something that should have been left to the panel to decide, and that's why it should have been instructed.
Under your argument, it always goes to the panel to decide, even though, I mean, what I'm having trouble with is understanding what the scintilla of evidence is, even the scintilla, that this was voluntary abandonment. I mean, clearly it was abandonment, but what is the even scintilla of evidence that it wasn't abandonment because he was discovered and warned about what would happen to him? So A, discovered, because R.S., who'd been asleep, woke up, and B, told him what he told him.
And, Your Honor, the scintilla that is there is that he admitted that it was wrong.
Chief Judge, I would ask that.
An issue two. Can we jump to issue two for a moment?
Yes, Your Honor.
What evidence was there that there was even an honest mistake of fact?
And, Your Honor, again, this comes down to Mr. R.S.'s statement. In terms of honesty, Mr. R.S. told him, appellant, that ain't right, and that he would be potentially punished for rape. Appellant's own statement agreeing with Mr. R.S. is an instance of subjective recognition that he was previously mistaken regarding Ms. KLF's consent. So this statement, recognizing it, is a statement that could be viewed by a panel to show that he subjectively recognized that he was mistaken before.
Well, wouldn't it have been a situation if someone's accusing you of rape right then and there while you're committing the rape, and someone says, you're raping her, wouldn't it be, I'm not raping her. This is consensual. So doesn't that cut against your pulling out things that are helpful to appellant at this point about saying, well, if you read between the lines, here's what was going on?
Your Honor, in terms of the overall statement itself, it does recognize that he was previously mistaken. And that's what turns this particular statement from being exculpatory into inculpatory under the two different standards of requiring both honest versus honest and reasonable. If the standard is honest, appellant's statement acquits him. If the standard is honest and reasonable, appellant's statement convicts him, because he recognizes that the circumstances surrounding it do constitute rape, and he agrees with it.
Okay, so he lost me somewhere. He's standing over her, presumably at least somewhat erect, and she's out of it, and he has an honest mistake as to her capacity to consent then?
And again, Your Honor, Mr. R.S. isn't clear. His testimony is the only...
I'm not asking Mr. R.S. I'm asking about the appellant.
Roger, Your Honor. And in terms of that, the only evidence provided on her state of intoxication and or capacity comes from Mr. R.S. or from Ms. K.S. herself, who's K.L.F., who states specifically at JA 108-1, that she was not that intoxicated that evening.
What about the background section from the CCA opinion where they talk about the fact that they were pulled over by the police, that R.S., otherwise known as Specialist Schwartz, was determined he barely passed and he was the most sober person there, and then the victim and the accused continued to drink after R.S. went to sleep in the chair?
And certainly that's...
Just ignore that?
No, Your Honor, obviously that's in the record. And in terms of the evidence as it came out, certainly that's also testimony provided by Mr. R.S., who wants to be and explicitly is put as the defense theory that he's the hero of his own story here. He has several different biases that come out throughout the trial. And that biases include himself having an interest in Ms. KLF, sleeping or going to her room at the end of the night, and being surprised that this would have occurred between appellant and Ms. KLF in the first place. He essentially is painted by the defense, and the defense theory is that he wants to present himself as the hero of his own story.
Well, if indeed he woke up to find that someone had his britches down and with an unconscious person passed out, don't you think that he was a hero? he stop that?
And, Your Honor, that was certainly stated by the government in terms of how they presented closing argument as well. At the end of the day, though, the standard of some evidence, you can hinge both theories, which are mutually exclusive, both mistake of fact as to consent as well as voluntary abandonment, on Mr. Arres' own statement.
Chief Judge, I know counsel is beyond his time, but I'd like to ask a question that goes to more the heart of the second issue.
That's fine.
Captain Gold, let's assume for the sake of argument that the military judge did not abuse his discretion in giving the instruction, all right, for mistake of fact. Now, your quarrel with the judge is that it should have been the honest mistake of fact as opposed to the honest and reasonable, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, what I'd like you to explain to me is, and I'm not taking issue with you, but I would like you to explain why there need only be an honest mistake with regard to an attempted offense like this and an honest and reasonable mistake as to consent if the offense had been completed. Does that make sense?
Yes, Your Honor. It really stems from the fact that attempt has a vague nature of the actus reus to it, of that overt act contained in Article 80. It requires a specific intent necessary to separate wrongful conduct from otherwise innocent conduct. And it does create an asymmetry between the underlying crime, mens rea, and the attempt. But the Supreme Court has specifically noted in United States versus Bailey that, yes, within the context of inchoate crimes, we do have a heightened mens rea requirement for both attempts and conspiracy. And it's that heightened mens rea requirement which is what is criminal.
But doesn't that mens rea have to go to the elements of the offense attempted? In other words, in this case, the elements are that this person effected or was on the way to effecting a sexual act by bodily harm. Isn't that right? So of those two elements, doesn't the mens rea for attempt, the intent to commit, go to those two elements?
And, Your Honor, that's when we look at the act itself that is criminal.
In other words, the attempt is the specific intent to commit these two elements of this offense. Is that a correct statement of the law?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Well, if consent is not an element of the offense, then it seems that the mens rea for the attempt in this case goes to elements of the offense, neither of which the accused was mistaken about. Do you know what my concern is? Am I being clear? Maybe not. By your hesitation, I suggest not. My concern is that you have indicated that an attempt in this case goes to committing a sexual act without the consent of the victim. But consent was long ago taken from or removed as an element from these sexual offenses, were they not?
Your Honor, I believe this court held in United States versus Prather that Article 120 C2A does essentially contain an element of lack of consent. I also believe that under Article 120 C1 Bravo that Prather's rationale for bodily harm also applies to make lack of consent essentially an element. Furthermore, to add to that particular argument, United States versus Greaves as well as Riggins both hold that consent is an element for an assault-type offense, and the rationale behind that for bodily harm applies equally to the particular charge here.
But doesn't Article 120 specifically state that a mistake of fact must be reasonable under all the circumstances?
And yes, Your Honor, in terms of the negligence standard that we have at play for the completion of the act, that absolutely would apply.
But it doesn't apply to an attempt.
Yes, Your Honor. In terms of attempt, there's the heightened mens rea requirement, which would apply to that element of lack of consent.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. You've gone a bit beyond your time. You'll have a little more time on rebuttal. The court will now hear from the government.
Here you are again. Yes, Your Honor. Here I am again. Chief Judge Erdman, judges of the court, may it please the court. My name is Majorani Shea, and I, along with Captain Cassandra Bisposa, represent the government in this matter. The military judge's instructions in this case were correct for two reasons. One, there was no need to instruct on a voluntary abandonment defense because the defense was not reasonably raised by the evidence here. And two, the military judge's mistake of fact instruction was appropriate in that it comported with the statutory definition of the defense and legislative intent. But even if erroneous, it was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. As to the voluntary abandonment instruction, there was no need because the defense was not reasonably raised by the evidence. Now, the sum evidence standard has been defined by this court to be similar to that test for legal sufficiency. And the question is whether or not there's some evidence upon which the members could reasonably rely to find every element of the defense. So voluntary abandonment is defined as a defense in which the person voluntarily and completely abandoned the intended crime solely because of his own sense of wrong prior to completing that crime. So in this case, there was evidence of abandonment, but no evidence that it was voluntary. What you have in the definition of the defense, it says it's not allowed if the abandonment results in whole or in part from other reasons. And those reasons include fearing detection or apprehension, encountering unanticipated difficulties or unexpected resistance.
Okay, and including somebody else saying, you're raping her, and you're going to go away for a long, long time.
Yes, Your Honor.
So basically what you're saying, the government's position is that any outside intervention negates the state of mind necessary for truly voluntary abandonment.
Well, Your Honor, there could be cases where there is some evidence that it's negated by some sort of external intervention. There may also be some evidence that there's some sort of change.
Okay,
of
but in this case?
In this case, there's no evidence that it was by his own volition that he...
Point that the word solely in the description of this, so that even if what he said is true, that like when he said this, it meant that like, oh, I realized it was wrong, that it wasn't solely because he realized it was wrong. He realized it was wrong because someone woke up and told him to stop.
Yes, Your Honor, that word is very strongly indicative of that conclusion, but also the further definition where it says it's not allowed if the abandonment results in whole or in part. So the fact that it allows for even a partial reason for that abandonment is something external, shows that that defense is not available. So in this case, you have an appellant who began assaulting Ms. KF after Mr. Schwartz fell asleep in the chair across the room, and he only stopped when Mr. Schwartz woke up, turned around, caught him mid-act, and gave him this lecture about the criminality of his actions. And
right. So there's no some evidence.
No, Your Honor, there's no evidence.
Yeah, there's no evidence.
There's no evidence as to the
some evidence is not does not exist.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And again, it is a low standard because it comports with the legal sufficiency. It's still a standard nonetheless.
Major Shea, lest we run into the problem we had with good old Captain Gold there and the clock, could you go into the second issue?
Yes,
on
Your
the
Honor.
Instruction.
Yes,
and,
Your Honor.
And basically what I want to know is what's the difference or what's wrong with having a lesser showing by the defendant on an attempt instruction than he would have to make on the actual offense, in this case, aggravated sexual assault?
You mean a higher mens rea for attempt versus a lower mens rea in the substantive offense?
Well, Honor? I guess it depends on who you are as whether it's higher or lower.
Your Honor, I would say ultimately
different.
It's not
about... Different. Let's just use that term. Let's just use the
using
term.
Using a different mens rea that attaches.
Yeah, remember, he's asking, he's quarreling that in this case he should have gotten an honest mistake instruction as opposed to an honest and reasonable.
Yes, Your Honor.
And we have some case law that suggests that he might be right.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And we have case law that comports to different crimes. But I think the starting principle is that it's up to Congress, it's up to legislature to define crimes and defenses. And so we have to look at every crime and how it's actually defined in the statute. And so we look at attempt, and it's true that with an attempt, you always have a specific intent to commit an offense under the code. So what you need to do next, you need to look at how that offense is defined. And so for an aggravated sexual assault under Article 120, the 2006 version, there's actually no element of consent that is required. Now, it is true that consent is a defense that can be brought up and that the government may be required to disprove it beyond a reasonable doubt, but that is still a different thing from what mens rea attaches to that fact of consent. And appellant's contention that when you have, anytime you have an attempt, a specific intent attaches to every element and fact is simply not true. United States versus Peterson is a good example of this. In that case, this court examined the same argument to a housebreaking charge. Now, with housebreaking, you have, again, a specific intent to enter with the intent to commit an offense. And in that case, it was indecent assault. And the court said that to constitute a defense, the specific intent elements, which in that case were intent to do bodily harm and to gratify lust, the mistake only needed to be honest. But as to the victim's lack of consent, on the other hand, it has to be reasonable and honest. So again, it really depends on how that substantive offense is defined by Congress.
What are we supposed to do with United States versus Langley and United States versus Jones and some other earlier cases?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, United States versus Langley was considering an assault with intent to commit rape. And at that time, rape had, as an element of that offense, the lack of consent.
That's right, but in, I think, a footnote, the court made an allusion to the fact that an attempted rape might be treated the same way.
Yes, Your Honor.
And in fact, in Jones, isn't there this kind of odd statement at the end of Jones saying exactly that?
Yes, Your Honor. I think if we were operating under the pre-2006 version of Article 120, that would be a proper conclusion or proper way to interpret the attempted offense of Article 120. But again, what we have since 2006 is some very express language that Congress gave not only to removing consent as an element of that offense, but also in defining mistake of fact as an affirmative defense. Now, I think it's important to understand how mistake of fact operates in general. And so, depending on the crime, it can operate as a defense in that it negates an element of that offense, or it can operate as an affirmative defense where it negates culpability for that offense, meaning it somehow negates whatever the mens rea is required. And when it comes to aggravated sexual assault under Article 120, it's clear that only general intent is required as to that fact of the victim's lack of consent, meaning that the appellant in this case had to be aware of the facts and circumstances that when viewed objectively arose to her lack of consent. And general intent is not, again, an explicit element of Article 120. And so the mistake of fact here doesn't operate in the way it would in some other offenses where there is an explicit or specific mens rea. It operates more as an affirmative defense in that it negates the culpability for that crime. So in that case, this court needs to defer to how the legislature has defined that defense, which is that it has to be both reasonable and honest.
This was like causing bodily harm to the other person?
Yes, Your Honor. There was actually two crimes of which he was convicted, and then one was conditionally dismissed by ACCA. But one was, yes, the aggravated sexual assault by causing bodily harm, and then the other one was the substantial. Your Honor, it's possible in some cases. Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't this notion of consent somehow like latent in that?
Yes, Your Honor. And in most cases, the government chooses to prove offensive touching by the non-consensual nature of it. And so in those cases, then the fact of consent does become an issue fact that the government has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. But that fact is still different from the mens rea that attaches to that fact. And the mens rea that attaches to that fact is one of general intent. It always has been for both rape and for aggravated sexual assault.
The fact of the consent and the mens rea of the consent, can you elaborate on what you mean?
Well, Your Honor, the fact of consent is an objective fact. And so if the government proves that objectively the victim did not consent, that used to be an element of rape, the lack of consent. What you also have often is what mens rea attaches, the mental culpability that attaches to that particular fact. So Congress could have defined a crime, and it does in some cases, such as the newest one with the reasonably should have known, a specific negligence standard. And in some other cases, such as with the 2012 version of sexual assault by bodily harm and other sexual assaults, it doesn't define a specific mens rea, and so when we interpret that statute, we see that it is general intent that is required to that fact, and we draw that from the explicit definition of mistake of fact having to be both honest and reasonable, and the fact that Congress wanted to impose a reasonableness standard as far as ascertaining that fact.
So, yeah. Counsel, appellant's argument is that with the honest and reasonable aspect, that the panel could have found an honest mistake of fact, but that it wasn't reasonable, and that that reasonable prong was incorrect. Do you agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor. I think appellant is trying to argue that even if there was some evidence to only the honest aspect of that, but not to the reasonableness, the military judge should have still instructed on it and then let the fact finder decide whether or not that's a viable defense. So
is it the government's position then that if there was no evidence of honest mistake, that there was no prejudice in giving the honest and reasonable instruction?
Well, Your Honor, the government's first position is that there's no error because there is no evidence as to an element of that defense. And again, this goes back to the first AE when we're talking about the some evidence standard. We still have to have some evidence to every element of the defense. That's what Schumacher says, that you need to have some evidence upon which members could rely to find that each element of the defense has been established. It doesn't have to be very strong, but there's got to be something there. And so, and this comports with a lot of our mistake of fact cases. So Jones, for example, in that case, the court found that it should have been an honest mistake of fact instruction, but said that there was no evidence as to the honesty, even though there was evidence in that case to the reasonableness. And that is precisely what happened here, that the military judge gave an instruction that even if it was erroneous and he only needed to instruct us to honest mistake of fact, that defense wasn't raised here. And that is because there's really no evidence as to what appellant actually or subjectively believed in regards to Ms. KF's consent. Even when he was confronted by Mr. Schwartz in this case, who told him what he was doing was rape, he didn't say something like, no, she's consenting, look, she's into this. He just said, you're right, and agreed to leave the room with Mr. Schwartz. And that is, if anything, that is the only indication of any subjective belief on his part, and it has nothing to do with the consent.
Well, leaving is some evidence, if we say there is some evidence, you know, a scintilla, a something, and that gets us past that threshold, what about the voluntariness of the action?
The voluntariness of him leaving as
Does it comport? Is the defense in fact raised? You got some evidence out here. And
Right.
Now if that gets you past that, but in fact, did he voluntarily abandon?
Yes, Your Honor. So you're discussing the voluntary abandonment defense. So even if this court determines that the judge should have instructed on a voluntary abandonment, there's no reasonable possibility that the panel would have found that defense actually arose to reasonable doubt. And again, the government's position is that it doesn't even arise to some evidence. But if even it does reach that extremely low standard of some evidence, it certainly doesn't amount to reasonable doubt in this case.
Well, and therefore would amount to prejudice.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes. Now, with the mistake of fact instruction, essentially because there was no evidence as to the honesty of that mistake, the military judge essentially gave what was a superfluous exculpatory instruction, which under Behenna, this court has said, if it doesn't impermissibly shift the burden of proof, it's harmless beyond a reasonable doubt.
So that's getting to the point that I was making.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's the government's position that because the accused didn't make the initial showing of honesty, or can't show it now, that this instruction didn't harm him because there could not have been a situation where the panel would say, honest mistake, but we find it was not reasonable.
Yes, Your Honor. And so presuming that there is at least some evidence that raises it, looking at the evidence itself, it certainly doesn't arise to a reasonable doubt as far as it being an honest mistake. Pending any further questions, this court should affirm the findings and sentence in this case.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal?
Counsel, can I get back to that point? I want to focus on what evidence there was that there was an honest mistake of fact. As I understood your argument from before, it was that when Ares said, that ain't right, you're going to be convicted of rape, you're going to spend 25 years in prison, and you're going to be raped yourself. And the accused then says, that's right, that we should infer from that that he had an honest mistake as to the consent of the victim.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there anything else we should be looking at from the record that would indicate that there was an honest mistake of fact besides that?
Your Honor, that's what distinguishes this case from Jones and Willis. We have subjective recognition. However, the circumstances surrounding it certainly support all of this. Even the honest mistake of fact instruction asks the panel to take into consideration who the accused is, their viewpoints in life, and instructs upon that. Here what we have is we have appellant coming back pretty drunk, stumbling, slurring his speech, and groggy when he gets back to the room, JA 38 to 40. At the beginning of the evening, it's appellant who texted or called Ms. KLF to come down and come out with them. Ms. KLF invited both appellant and Mr. R.S. into her bed, and then subsequently, and it's not into her bed, into appellant's bed, and then subsequently pushes Mr. R.S. out of the bed. Appellant himself is kissing Ms. KLF, and this is distinct from Willis and Jones in the fact that it's appellant who is doing the kissing. Why would somebody who is about to rape somebody kiss a person if he's just intending to rape them? And that is all the circumstances under which Mr. R.S.'s statement.
Does he have to have intended to rape her? I mean, couldn't it be the case that he just doesn't understand that having sex with a passed out woman is rape, and so he's kissing her?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's the mistake. Because the mistake goes towards that overall intent.
No, if he's thinking about the law, that doesn't help him one bit.
And, Your Honor, it certainly wouldn't be the case that that would be a defense for the underlying offense itself. But he's charged with the attempt, and the heightened mens rea attaches to the specific intent to commit a criminal act here, which is not just having sex, but having sex having sex without the person's consent. Subject to the court's further questions, at the very least, the specific intent must go towards an individual's purpose in committing a criminal act. Because the burden of proof was lowered by an honest and reasonable mistake of fact, appellant or the government cannot prove that this mistake, that the judge's error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt.
Can you just explain to me, just in like one sentence, what was the honest mistake regarding?
The honest mistake was regarding her consent, Your Honor. Appellant respectfully requests this court set aside and dismiss the findings of guilty to charge one and its specifications.
Thank you, counsel.
I actually have a question. I know you've got a minute left here. Can I take advantage of it?
Take the minute.
All right. Let's again assume that the instruction, there was enough evidence to give the instruction. I'm not saying there is or isn't. I'm just saying, assume for the moment that there is. Is there a problem with having to show only an honest mistake with regard to this kind of an offense when the offense itself requires an honest and reasonable mistake? Because it seems, in a case like this, that voluntary intoxication would negate the attempt in this case, would it not? If someone is voluntarily intoxicated and can show that he or she honestly believed that they were not committing this offense or that the victim was consenting, what have you, then that would be a perfect defense to this attempt, would it not?
I would agree with you, Your Honor, that certainly would be something. However, at the end of the day, if it's properly instructed upon, mm-hmm. the panel can determine whether or not that was indeed honest.
My point is that voluntary intoxication is not a defense to the attempted offense, is it? To the targeted offense.
To the underlying offense, Your Honor?
Yes.
Yes.
But it would be, in this case, if there an honest mistake is only required. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, and I actually... Yes, Your Honor.
I'm not testing your knowledge of LaFave and Scott. I'm just curious.
And, all right, but that's all I need. At the end of the day, that's something that Congress can certainly... Right, to note here, Congress did not change Article 80. They also did not create an attempt crime underneath Article 120. If they want to and they want to adopt the model penal code language, they certainly can.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel. The court thanks counsel for both parties. The case is now submitted. The court will be in recess until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning.
All rise.